nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, a new week in paradise. And Dr. Richard Massey, who's here this morning on the third Monday of the month, his computer was having a bad hair day. And as you can see, I have one every day. So we fix it. Good morning. Dr. Ray Pete will be here after Dr. Massey. We'll talk to Dr. Massey till about 10:30 or so. And good morning to you. We got a nice week for you. I'll kind of fill you in along as we go. Some of the people we're going to be having on tomorrow and Wednesday. But since we are running late, let's dig right in. Reach right out. Time is here. You're an honorary musketeer. I just remembered that. Remember that, man? Reach right out. Time is here. You're an honorary musketeer. I can't believe I...
All right. That's it. Yeah.
So that thing was in my subconscious just running around for the last 60 years. Good morning, Dr. Massey. You look great. I like your shirt. Look at you, all blue.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a blue Monday, as they say.
Oh, it's a blue Monday. Rainy days and Mondays get you down or anything?
Yes, yes. Saying in our German class, they call it Blauer Montag.
Blauer Montag?
Blue Monday.
Blue Monday.
Yeah.
Do you know in chronobiotic nutrition stuff, Adam Bergstrom, you're supposed to wear red on Monday. You know, red.
Okay.
Yeah, like red. Tuesday then would be orange, right?
Tuesday then would be orange.
Red. Right. Red. I'm hearing myself a little bit. I'm hearing myself a little bit in the background. Oh, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay.
Okay. Well, I think it's fine. So how you doing, kid? What's up? How's your life? Tell me about everything. How's Aunt Marge, Uncle Jim?
Everything is pretty good, Patrick. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Are you in the Meridian Girl? You guys still sheltering? Eating soup and sheltering
we
in
are.
Place? Are you really?
Yeah, we are, and it's raining today, so it's a nice day to have shelter.
Yeah. Wow. It is.
Yeah.
Dr. Massey.
With the windows open, really nice.
One of Dr. Massey's specialties, well, kind of his specialty is recall healing, right, Doc? This is what your magic, what you do the most is these days.
Yeah, that's what I enjoy the most. A shout out to Jobert Renaud and Michelle Schrader, who you've had on the show. She's teaching a course on addiction coming up here soon from the recall healing perspective. So,
really?
People can Zoom that. And
on addiction, huh?
So my label, yeah. It looks like a good one, sort of the recall healing perspective on how to get free from addictions.
And when is that?
You know, I can't even remember, but it's coming up pretty soon, you know, in the next few weeks.
Oh, maybe somebody could email you if they're interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I would get involved.
And you all have Michelle Schrader.
I'm sorry?
You have Michelle Schrader's contact. You have Michelle's contact information on your page, I'm sure. She's been on the show before.
Oh, that's right.
Folks Michelle could, from Michelle Schrader, yeah.
Folks could look at for Michelle Schrader. On our in our search little function and contact her directly. I would actually do something like that. I could, you know, but I think I'm meeting my crack dealer at that time, so I won't have a chance. But maybe later, you know. Maybe later. I'm sure I can fit it in.
Yeah, fit it in somewhere.
Yeah. What do you make of addictions, just generally? That might be a fun place to start. I guess we've all had our addictions over the years of pretty much anything, right?
Seems like it. These habitual patterns. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'll just reach back here and take a quick look again. But while I'm doing that, I'll mention that the new thing that I'm up to is that I was I kept waiting for a day when I would feel like making a really great video for YouTube or BitChute, and I decided it's just not going to happen that way. So what I'm doing now is when people come over, I'm doing like a 15 or 20 second video, keeping them anonymous, of course, and just putting out a little one or two little pieces of information in the video and putting them on Facebook and Instagram.
Really?
So if people want to start following that, they certainly can. And there's no marketing. I'm, of course, not sponsored by anyone. So it'll just be what's going on with me and that person and our heart coherence on that day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty interesting, Patrick, you know, some of the stories. And I don't tell these parts at the time. I say something like a nice overview. But a person came in just the other day and they were having trouble selling a house, and they, you could tell it really bothered them, and they said, I just hate real estate. You know, ask my husband, he'll tell you, I've hated real estate my whole life, you know. And he goes, yeah, that's true. And she said, every time I work on selling a house, we get right down to the closure, and then the person just leaves and drops out on the deal. It's just so frustrating to do all that work. So, you know, in the recall healing world, what is our first home? Well, our first home is the womb. So I ask her what happened during labor and delivery when her mom was, you know, giving birth to her.
Uh-huh.
And it was a really unusual story that her mother labored for 24 hours. And this was like she's the ninth child. I mean, she should have just popped right out, right? Labored for 24 hours, and then the labor stopped. It just stopped. And she realized, and we realized in that moment, and her heart coherence went way up, and her face changed when she realized that she was just subconsciously repeating her mother's labor and delivery story with her.
Oh.
Every time she sold the house. And so, close this window here. So it cleared it out of her subconscious, and we'll see if it's enough to change her outer reality. But it usually is.
So how did it tie in?
How'd
that tie in, like mom's that experience, and then the real estate? Where was the tie in with the real estate? I missed that part.
Yeah. So every house will be compared in my subconscious mind to the uterus I was in before I was born.
Oh, kind of symbolism kind of thing.
Well, yeah, for biology, the uterus is my first home. So how did the movement go regarding my first home?
Hmm.
Well, it was a lot of hard work, and then it just stopped.
And then it just stopped.
Yeah. And she has that she has that experience over and over, and had never put that together.
So do you think she'll sell her house now?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, it was a really big moment. You know, you can tell when people blush and their whole body posture changes and their heart coherence goes up, something big shifted. Uh-huh. And it was a fun moment for all of us in the room. You know, we, I was like, oh no, we're just, you know, repeating the origin story and never knew it.
Repeating the origin story. So that's kind of one of the things that you really do, the origin story. The origin story is it always about like our birth in the physical reality?
So I'm just doing the biology part. And of course there's lots of origin stories. You know, if you listen to Matt Kahn, he talks about how we're actually really still in heaven. We're just astral projecting this experience down here in order to elevate the earth to heavenly vibration.
All right.
So he would talk about that origin story. And this year happens to be the year it looks like we've chosen to repeat our cultural origin story, the origin story of people of my skin color on this continent. It's the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower. It's the first time in history where old people have been put in places and their kids can't come see them when they die. And which both of those happened at the origin story. And so the more of that we see and become conscious of, the lighter the load that we carry through life. So it just makes life easier and lighter.
Oh, I see. So one of the ideas behind your work is to help folks get to the point of they're not victims. Something bad is not
big deal. That's a big one.
That's a big one, right? Say, oh, that's why I'm going through this, because of this and this, and then that really helps us all when we figure that out.
Wow.
You know that even though it's still uncomfortable, we could have pain. It makes it easier for some reason, I guess.
Yes, it does. And so this woman was able to tell her mom, "Thank you." That's the perfect labor and delivery story for me. And I leave all the suffering, you know, back at that place in time with you and the doctors. And so there was another one recently that was like that. It was a guy who said, you know, he said, I just don't understand it. He said, I'm a creative person. I have to do a creative job. I can't do a regular job. My head would explode. And I try to explain that to people and they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, what happened at your birth? Oh man, me and my mom, we both almost died. It turned out I was too big to make it through her pelvis. My head was being squashed in her pelvis and her uterus was about to rupture. And she was trying to tell everybody, it was her first child, she was trying to tell everybody something's not right, but you know, the people were saying things like, oh, it's okay, honey, it's your first baby, you're going to be all right. And so he spends his life trying to tell people. He feels like very pressured to explain to people how he's feeling, how he can't fit into a certain mold or his head's going to explode. And now he realizes that, you know, he can move past that by just telling his mom, you know, thank you for the giving me birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave all that back with you and the doctors and the nurses who didn't understand what was happening until the last minute when there had to be an emergency C-section. And that's how his life goes over and over and over. And now he won't have to do that anymore because he said thank you for how it was instead of it just being subconscious.
And thank you for how it was. So it's the idea... letting go of any kind of animosity towards people that we believe cause some weird things with us.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that there's no more blame left in the story. It's nobody's fault. It happened the way it happened. And there are some things that happen to people that aren't forgivable. But I can find a place where I withdraw my judgments about it. So when I see reality as it actually happened, give thanks for the parts that I can, withdraw judgments at least from the parts that I can't, be grateful for at the time. My burden in life gets lighter. Life is easier, and a lot of times the illnesses disappear.
Yeah. So I wonder what the difference is. Excuse me. We talk a great deal about the idea that we create all these little dynamics, what we call disease, right? And so I wonder what the difference is with folks coming to that realization, you know, I created this low thyroid or whatever it might be, and also the difference between that and then thinking that something bad just kind of happened to them. Bad luck, right? No, bad luck. I got a low thyroid. I wonder how the body reacts differently to that.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And what I've come to is rarely is a person's thyroid about anything that they personally created. I mean, they would have to fall in a vat of mercury or something like that on an accident to have it be about them personally. Almost always there's a family story. For instance, with Hashimoto's, there's a family story of something needing to be slowed down.
Oh, because that's a fast thyroid, right? Hashimoto's.
Yeah. Hashimoto's is usually slow. It's usually you're burned out. Graves' disease is the fast one. That's the one that old Don Knotts had. Yeah. And that's when something in the family needed to happen faster in order for somebody to have survived or to have avoided a crippling accident. If something had happened faster, everything would be better. And there's still a blame in the system. There's still a feeling like victims, like you say. We're victims because this thing didn't happen faster or slower. And the thyroid will tell that story until all the blame and victimhood is set aside.
So the thyroid expresses that story because it's all a spiritual, mental kind of blob of stuff. That's just how the karmic thing kind of works out with it.
Biology's like the accountant.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps track of everything. So, you know, it's going to, every expenditure, every debit, you know, the body tells the story.
Yeah, that's fascinating you say that, because that's sure been my experience, Doc, over the last 15 years going through all my little weird things that I did. But can you turn down my sound or something? I keep getting me in the background hearing myself back a little bit. Can you do that and still hear me?
So you're talking to someone who's not very technical, but I'll...
Hello, testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hello, testing. I don't hear it now. Can you still hear me? Okay. I think you did it, whatever you did. Yeah, I don't hear it.
Okay.
I don't hear it now.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, let's do a quick little break here, and then stay right there. Dr. Richard Massey, Patrick Timpone, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Come on in, join the show. We have lots to do this morning. Always fun to have Dr. Massey on, and Dr. Ray Pete will be here.
We were talking to Wayne Blakely, the Living Streams guy, and he told us some interesting things about sulfur.
When we eat the glyphosate, what it does, it inhibits the plant from uptaking any minerals and nutrients from the soil.
Right, right.
And the plants die. Okay, so that's what it does to us. When we eat the glyphosate, exactly the same thing. It stops the uptake of minerals, and especially sulfur. And sulfur causes people... We're made up of 52% sulfur, take away the water, okay? And we're sulfur beings. We have to have sulfur to keep us sane. We have to have sulfur in our brains to keep us sane. Otherwise, we get manic, you know, bipolar, things like this, and you have to be on drugs. That's all caused from the glyphosate.
Yeah, we've heard that about the sulfur. We've had Stephanie Seneff on from MIT.
Yeah, I know Stephanie.
Yeah, do you? And the whole sulfur cycle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we probably would be eating sulfur every day, whether the glyphosates are there or not, but this is another good reason. People just feel better taking it. Brings oxygen everywhere. You can order sulfur. Three prices, United States, Canada, and worldwide. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, if you want to order more than 4 pounds and a discount. Sulfur, organic sulfur. Yeah, it's the real deal. There's no silicone dioxide, nothing else but pure organic sulfur. On oneradionetwork.com. Here's a short explanation how this product, Pearlseum, works with our teeth from Dr. Rulin Zhu.
So basically, when you brush your teeth with the pearl, make your existing teeth stronger and also filling up, because our teeth is being harmed every day by what we eat. It can become porous or weak, even loose part of the bones. So when you brush teeth with the Pearlseum, and the pearl powder will stimulate the new bone growth and also make the existing teeth very strong.
So it's actually stimulating new growth on the teeth in a natural way and not
painting something over it?
It is very natural. It makes existing teeth stronger. New growth of the bone, it is very beautiful color. You know, it's kind of like a pearl. It's,
yeah.
And especially the pearl, it's a crystal. And so when it grows, the bone is the most healthy way.
Yeah, we love this product. Give it a try if you'd like. Click on the Pearl CM ad on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. We have it set up to go to the two container where you get a nice discount. But if you only want one to start, just click over to the single bottle and get that one. It's the Pearl CM, the ad right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.
Indeed we are. We're listener supported. OneRadioNetwork.com. And you are our part of our support, most of our support, actually all of our support. You know, what can I say? Let's see, I
That's
think.
Wonderful. You know, if there was more news like that that was listener supported, what a different world we would have.
What a different world we would have. You remind me of all these songs. What's the name of that song? Oh, well, I don't know. So I want to go back to the thyroid for a second. So many people, so Hashimoto's is actually a low thyroid, right?
Right. Yes, it's a person who needs to slow down time.
Slow down.
And it comes from a family history. We're having more time. Like if someone gets a terminal diagnosis in the family and say, you've got 6 months to live, one of their relatives may very well get Hashimoto's to make it seem like that 6 months lasts longer than it does.
Okay.
Deep down inside, they feel like I need to have more time before my relative dies. I've got to slow down time.
Well,
and then if the relative gets well, the Hashimoto's can instantly disappear.
So what about in my case where I don't believe in time, right? So, you know, I really don't. So I know it's always now, and that's how I live my life. Would my thyroid act favorably to that? And it must, right?
So the question would be, is what does your subconscious believe about time?
Well, God
and
knows.
That's right? Yeah, that's an innocently inherited perception from the last 3 to 4 generations of
I
your
see.
Family.
I see.
Like, how did they perceive time? And that's the story your biology will tell until that's transformed or transcended in some way that the subconscious buys as legitimate for you.
But then, I mean, if you believe that to be true, which I know you do, then wouldn't that put me and others into a victim mode where something's happening to us, right, that we didn't really, well, no, maybe not, because if we reincarnated in a particular family and probably had a choice in that, then we kind of chose grandma
That's
and grandpa
right.
anyway, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we're here that way, you know, and whoever or whatever's running this thing has a big love heart.
Right.
You know? I mean, the synchronicities that I get to see, they just blow my mind. I go, how could a person's birth or early childhood experience actually affect jobs the Army gives them 20
yeah.
years later?
Exactly. How's that even happen?
How can that be?
Yeah, how can that happen, right?
Yes. You know, and that actually happened in my family. You know, my dad and his brother were just little kids when they barely survived the Miami hurricane of 1926. They had to hide out in a hole that had been made where a big tree was uprooted. And what they needed, all those people, was somebody who could predict weather and somebody who could get on the radio and tell people, hey, this is coming. So when they both got drafted into World War II, they made my dad a weatherman and my Uncle Jim a radio operator.
I know. You just can't even make that stuff up, right?
No. And it's everywhere.
Everything.
People come in and I just look at it. I'm not having to try as hard anymore to figure out patterns. It's like they're hitting me in the face, you know. It's pretty amazing.
Like, give me an idea of what you're saying. So when people come to visit and you work with them on this, what do you mean by, in other words, as you see more of how the Matrix and all that is played out, it's just easier for it to come in for you so you can then work with people?
Yeah, sure. I mean, people are basically saying it with their behavior, with what illnesses the body is presenting with. We call them illnesses. That's a sad word. The story that the body is telling, the untold story. And you find it right there in the family or in their birth story. Typically, it's in one of those two places.
Yeah.
I have to tell you a funny joke I heard the other day on Dry Bar. Do you ever watch Dry Bar comics on YouTube? It was a Native American guy who, of course, was kind of forced to grow up in the Catholic Church. And he said, yeah, man, when I was born, they accused me of a capital crime called original sin. But then a few days after I was born, they baptized me and washed it off. He said, you know, when I got older, I found out I'm only here because of a defective condom. He said, I think the worst I should have been charged with is leaving the scene of an accident.
I like that. Leaving the scene of an accident. That's hilarious. That's great. Patrick Timpone along with Dr. Richard Massey. And he's here the third Monday of each month, which would be September 21. If you'd like to be on the show, you can join us at Patrick, OneRadioNetwork.com. I think our phone line is still kind of wonky. Let me test it. Hold on. Yeah, we got a buzz on that. They haven't been able to fix that yet. So just use the email, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. I just remembered, Michelle Schrader is on my little Facebook thing, and she comments actually every now and then. So I will private message her and get the scoop on that addiction thing.
Ah, okay. Good. Very nice.
And so that's going to be something that someone can participate in from anywhere around the world, right, with her?
Yes. Yeah, anybody can do that. And we actually had one of the listeners to your show sit in on the Family Constellations, a guy from Australia. Sat in and watched, yeah. So we'll be doing Family Constellations again this evening. We've done 4 COVID constellations. I think I'd mentioned that before.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I got to be the virus twice.
You were the virus twice.
Yeah.
I always thought that about you,
Doc. Yeah, of course, I don't know that. I know, yeah. I was the happiest guy in the whole group. And, of course, I didn't know I was being the virus. I thought I was somebody's grandpa or husband or something.
Uh-huh.
It turns out that the solution is responsible for the suffering of humanity.
All right, let's unpack that a little bit. What are you saying?
Mm-hmm. So Stephanie set up representatives for the virus, that was me, set up somebody lying on the ground, which is a deceased person or a suffering person, and set up someone representing humanity and someone representing the solution to the virus. And the solution to the virus was the one who was responsible for the suffering and the death. The virus had no responsibility in it at all. And of course, we did this at the very beginning, like way back in March. And it turns out that's how it's played out, that the virus itself has very little to do with life and death, but our perceived solutions to the virus create a lot of suffering, create a lot of death.
Oh, I see. So it's what we've been, and we've talked about with you before. This virus, regardless of its origin, it may not even be, well, let's not go there right now, but that the real problem or the challenges and the pain with all of this is souls' different reaction to it with maybe their relationship with the government or the mayor, somebody's telling them to do something, or closing their business or masking. That's the real suffering.
So any and all of that. And so each person will find their part in it. But just on a purely medical level, the people who get supposedly the most intense care are the ones who have the highest mortality rate.
Right. We know that, right? Science is showing that.
And that's the solution. That's the solution. That's not the virus.
What do you mean the solution?
So when somebody treats a quote illness in a certain way, it's called iatrogenic, and it's been officially known as the third or fourth cause of death in the United States regarding anything. It's, oh, we thought this is how we were supposed to treat something, and we were dead wrong. And we keep it anyway because it's the standard of care. So the word that's used for that is iatrogenic. And it's been around for a long time. And this is one case where there's a lot of attention focused on that, that our very, very best and brightest minds, when people are there with them in the hospital being treated, they have the highest mortality.
Because they're trying to do more, like ventilators or give them drugs or antibiotics or something that they, because they want to help them.
Sure, and it's being treated as an infection, which it's not. And as you sent over the Zach Bush link, viruses are not even part of the germ theory. Even if you still believe the germ theory, viruses are not part of the germ theory. And the word virus is a sad, sad word, tragically misplaced. What's actually happening is that every cell in my body makes these little particles called exosomes, and it's doing it all the time. It, you know, when you listen to Zach, you find out that there's 10 to the 31 exosomes in the air, in the ground, and the water. And that's like 10 million times the number of stars in the universe, the known universe. So I'm breathing them in and out right now. And the stress that I'm under, or the joy I'm feeling, whichever, is orgasmically making exosomes. My cells are actually, I'm going to use this word, ejaculating exosomes.
Good for them.
It's this pleasure. It's like Rumi said, just being in a body is an ecstatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
So when all the programming is turned off, the idea of being in this body, it's ecstatic.
It's just not too bad, is it?
So we're giving off quadrillions of these exosomes. And even if you and I sit in our room, they'll go all the way around the world in 3 weeks, get onto dust particles, air currents. And it's our way of saying, I'm connected with you. I care about you. And that's what's going on. And then somehow this word virus, which meant poison for 500 years, got put on these little orgasmically produced particles of connection. And so we wound up calling these things viruses, which completely cuts us off from the joy of living here into these little particles. And that's a tragic loss. So I'm in favor of switching over to the word exosome and talking about how my cells are orgasmically producing those all the time.
So exosomes are not viruses. Is there anything such?
They are.
They are.
Yeah, they're exactly the same thing. But the word exosome actually works. It says something that's being pushed outside of my body, like outside of the cell. It doesn't have a bad connotation to it. When someone comes along and calls that particle that my little loving cell made because it cares about you and calls it poison, well, how does that feel?
Not good.
You know, what kind of subconscious image comes up in my biology and my subconscious brain when I hear the word virus, which has meant the poison for 500 years? I'm going to want to be away from that. I'm going to want to hide myself from it. I'm going to want to put on a mask and hide in my house because I don't want your cooties. Now these beautiful exosomes you're making are suddenly cooties. They're viruses. They're poison. I've got to keep away from you. And that's exactly the backwards behavior for healing, even in the time of a plague. It's better to love. I don't think Mother Teresa caught anything. And she was inhaling and kissing every germ on the planet. So love and connection is really the way biology wants to go, but it's not the way our culture wants to go.
So it's not appearing to you, or is it, that there are some unique, virulent, potentially deadly, communicable virus that is attacking people?
You know, and I was raised to believe that, Patrick. I mean, that's how I was taught growing up. But I have to tell you, in the operating room, I never wore gloves. I didn't wear protective eye gear or anything over my face. I just didn't. And I got stabbed with AIDS needles. I got stabbed with hepatitis needles. And in my mind, I thought maybe it's because I go to church that I didn't get AIDS or hepatitis. I mean, that was the best story I could come up with.
Uh-huh.
I was scared until I realized I didn't catch either one of them. I've had people with horrible illnesses cough right in my face in the recovery room when I pulled their breathing tube out. I mean, you know, big mucousy things that I won't go into detail. And I never got anything that they had. So my personal experience fits more with what Zach Bush is than what I was taught in pharmacy and medical school.
Dr. Richard Massey is here. We had a little issue with getting the video on our front page. So if you're listening on audio this morning and you want to do the video, you can just see the little YouTube icon on the top right of One Radio Network and click on that little UBTube thing. You can see it. And you can watch us live stream. I just may go here and, you know, we'll just end the show. Just click on it and you'll see it on YouTube, and we'll see if I can get it straightened out before we get Ray Pete on. But you can hear the doc and join the show. So then you think Zach Bush's, what he's talking about, this idea of there's not really a virus. These are all exosomes. You think this is your understanding, or this is where we're at with this thing right now?
Yeah, when I saw Andrew Kaufman show the picture of the exosome and the coronavirus and they were identical, people can look at that on YouTube. And then as he was putting his bibliography up there, one of them was listed from 2003, and the title of the article was Viruses Are Exosomes. And, you know, I thought, boy, isn't this how everything has been in my world? We name something an illness. So here's what I was thinking yesterday. So when a person gets a CAT scan or an MRI, and the doctor says to that person, oh my, there's two small spots on your lung and we don't know what they are. So think about that. So if there's two small spots on the lung, we don't know what they are, how many of my 70 trillion cells are working exactly like they're supposed to? And how many cells are involved in those two little spots? Yet when a medical person says that, in our culture, our focus of attention goes completely to those two spots.
Yeah.
And we totally forget gratitude for the 70 trillion that are functioning perfectly well. So my experience now is that finding gratitude for all the parts that are working great is a huge part of healing.
Yes. Yeah.
As long as I stay focused on just the part that somebody says is a problem, then it's just going to grow.
Yeah, I understand. So it's the idea where I guess we've just because of our training and maybe many lifetimes at it this way, where we have a pain or we have something that we believe is out of whack. Maybe somebody told us, a doctor or a blood test, that if when we focus on that, then that's really, I don't know, it feels like it kind of creates a loop.
Yes, as you, I agree.
As you said, anything that, everything is biology in the body, right? Everything, probably every experience we've ever happened, we've ever had, right?
Yes. And so a quick one is about joints, Patrick. This is one that Joubert said people would be better from their joint problems after the weekend class. He would train them to rethink and retalk to their joints. So if my knee hurts, it's hurting because it's healing, not because it has an illness in it, right? If I start talking to my knee that way, I break the loop.
Mm-hmm.
If I keep looking at my knee going, oh, you're letting me down, you know, how come you have to hurt? Then I'm re-injuring it with my own words, and I stay in the loop, breaking down and healing and breaking down and healing.
Yes.
But if I can come and say, oh, wow, I hate this pain, but thank you for healing. I may even take something for the pain, but thank you for healing. I get it that you're trying to help me regrow this joint to a healthy place.
Yeah.
Then the joint pain stops. We get out of the loop.
Well, it's interesting. I've been going through, the last couple months, just mostly not sleeping. And these eye bags are brought to you by that. That's it. And, yeah. That's right. The bags under my eyes are brought to you by the fact that I don't sleep. Oh, good. So, but, you know, it's really interesting because that is exactly how I've been working with it. I mean, sometimes I wake up every hour, you know, and just, and I, you know, I'm not thinking about anything. I don't worry about anything, and I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
But my body is just, you know, but that's the way I talk to my body, Doc, when I do that. Okay, you're doing good, you know, you're fine. Whatever we're working through, I do, and I talk to myself like that. That's the only way I know how to do it, otherwise I'd go crazy, right? We're doing fine.
Yes.
Get up, have a little orange juice, hang out a minute, I don't know, listen to some music, or you know, watch Stairway to the Stars, or, you know, whatever, you know, for half an hour, have a little nibble, and let's go back to bed, and it's going to be fine. And that's what I kind of do. I just kind of work with it that way. And I know I'm going to, I know I'm working through something, right? I'm not sure what it is, but I know I'm working through something. I mean, do you know of any other way to deal with it?
Yeah, no, I like what you're saying. And so what comes to me is I'm imagining you're sending out good exosomes for everybody who's having a hard time. Yeah.
Well, good for me. That's my job, I guess, exosome maker. It's hilarious, boy. I tell you what, it's really, really something. I wonder if, you know, I do find myself from time to time, when I, Sam, I'm going to start now, when I think about, it's great, man, when I think about people, some going through and losing their businesses, and, you know, I have a neighbor, you know, and they only let him open up 25%, and, I mean, he's worked his whole life on this business, and if I think about that, you know, I start crying.
Yes.
Because I really, and I can't do anything, you know, for these people.
Yes. Yes.
And so, you know, I don't know, maybe that's what's, you know, maybe that's what's keeping me up at night.
It could be, Patrick, it could be.
I don't know. I mean, think what people are going through.
Yes.
Now. I the whole political and the financial stuff, and people being told what to do, which I suspect they're having a hard time with that, I suspect.
Mm. Yes.
So what can we do for them? Anything?
Yeah, well, it sounds like you already are. And there's unspeakable suffering in the world right now. I count myself as fortunate so far, being sheltered from the most difficult parts of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an email.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Patrick, does the doctor mean that if the patient just stayed home and didn't bother with medical intervention, that they'd have a better survival rate? Oh, you were talking about the COVID and the over-treatment. So she's asking, are you saying that if people would just stay home, they'd have a better survival rate?
So it's not so much my opinion. It looks like that's what the numbers are saying. That at least in the beginning, the worst place a person could be was a New York City intensive care unit. But everybody's an individual. That's my plan. If I got any symptoms like that, I'm staying at home. I'm not going to the hospital. And it would be hard for me to imagine a scenario. I would have to be so out of it. Somebody would have to decide for me that it's better for me to go. And of course, if you listen to this show, you realize that you are surrounded with information that reverses even the worst so-called viral syndromes. And a lot of those things are available to you at home. Even something like liposomal vitamin C, just start megadosing that, would be good. A hydrogen peroxide bath would be great. Taking big doses of vitamin A and D along with that C. Those are things people can do at home. And you're just not going to get that in the hospital.
But it sounds like when you talk in these terms that there is some need for the immune system to do something more, but how can that be if our model, mine or yours, is just the exosome thing and there's no virus trying to get me?
Yeah, there's no virus trying to get anybody. And I'm going with Zach Bush here. So he's the one my body and resonance go with. So there's not enough genetic information on a virus to actually cause illness. It's too small of a piece of information. The problem is that some of these things we call viruses, some of these exosomes can attach to particles of pollution.
Yes.
Either my inner particles of pollution that are because of my own fears and resentments. Mm. I'm making my own toxic metabolism products, or industrial pollutants. And when it does that, this exosome or virus has the capacity to take those directly into the cell, past all the defense mechanisms. That's where the problem arises with us going out of balance. It's never because of the exosome or virus itself. It's because it grabbed onto some toxic metabolite in me because of my fears and resentments, or some industrial pollutant, and it's escorted them inside the cell. So my job would be to cleanse that.
Okay, so that could be a model for like any kind of flu thing.
It's telling us, it's making some of us the canaries in the mine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let's face it, we've gone too far with pollution. We've just gone too far. we killed too many trees, we dumped too many petrochemical waste products in the water. And every time this so-called flu stuff happens, it's a reminder that, hey, this is how far you've gone. This is how many canaries died this year. But if we blame it on a virus, it lets irresponsible behavior go unnoticed. So I can't blame the big person who's dumping poison in the water if it's a virus. Well, gosh, that industry or corporation couldn't help that. It was just a virus. Yeah, I got around one of my relatives or some snotty kid at preschool, and here I am sick.
Yeah.
Not because of pollution. Yeah. Not because we're tearing up the earth and not aware of it. It's a little tiny sub-microscopic thing, you know, that's the cause of all of my difficulties. And it's convenient, you know, it allows us to go unconsciously through life, but there may not be much more time for that.
So it's the idea that through the magic of God's Spirit will help us to have experiences so we can see more clearly of what's going on.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Well said. I like that. That's the whole thing.
Which what would be disease is.
Yes. Yeah. It just wants us to be aware of something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise how could we change? Why would we change?
Why would we change?
Why would we
That's
change?
Right.
Right. I mean, we just wouldn't. We would just keep doing what we're doing.
We just wouldn't.
You know, why would we change?
Yes. I like that.
Boy, they probably wouldn't let us in medical school to teach this stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
It's hilarious. Dr. Richard Massey, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Stay there, Doc. We'll do a little break here. This is some technology that we're pretty jazzy Rooney about. I can honestly say that it's probably not an oxidative thing that's keeping me up. It's probably, I know it's some spiritual thing why I'm having so much fun with it, because if it were, I would be sleeping like the proverbial log with as much as the AquaCure Brown's gas that I'm breathing. So don't get one of these. Well, I mean, whatever. But this is really nice technology. There's so many other things going on with me that on the physiological level, fun things that I'm seeing, little bitty sore spots going away, or little things in my toes, and it's really cool technology, Brown's gas. Listen to Dr. Flagon from some years ago. This conversation goes back 7 years with Dr. Patrick Flanagan. Listen.
And then I discovered that Hunza water also contained negative ionized hydrogen, which is a source of biological electrons. When we're young, we have enzymes in our body called dehydrogenase, and the purpose of dehydrogenase is to lift off hydrogen ions from foods we eat, and their purpose is to create NADH, which is a chemical that acts as a shuttle in the mitochondria for producing all the energy in our body, adenosine triphosphate. And when people take this, it causes DNA repair. It heals the body from all kinds of oxygen-free radicals. It also helps the body recover from damage from radiation.
Well, we certainly want some of this stuff, right? Check out our AquaCure machine. AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com. Lifetime warranty. And along with a lifetime warranty, a 1-year, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. If you don't like your results, breathe the gas, bubble the water, listen to what Dr. Flanagan has to say about this and others. The AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com. Use promo code OneRadio, 10% discount. And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, George is going to be here tomorrow. It'll be fun. It's been a long time since we've talked to him. George is the man who knows a lot about hydrogen, and we're going to take your questions. So if you have a machine, many of you do, if you have questions about it, join us tomorrow. Or if you want to learn more about the benefits of breathing Brown's gas and drinking the water, I got a little, my little hydrogen water here we make every day for Doodle and I. Join us tomorrow. That's going to happen, I think about 10:30. Ben Swan is going to be here tomorrow. He's a very cool investigative reporter that he's going to do a whole new platform that we're going to get involved in, kind of a another option to YouTube. So many different options are coming out. Ben Swan here tomorrow, and also George Weissman with the AquaCure Brown's Gas Machine, and talking about potential benefits of hydrogen. It'll be happening tomorrow on OneRadioNetwork.com. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these are Thrival links. Take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're with Dr. Richard Massey, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. This will ties right in, and let's get this one before I want to ask you about past your germ theory thing. This is from Jeremiah. Remember that one? Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Oh.
I remember.
Very musical this morning. Wants to know, I've been trying to get my testosterone levels up, and I haven't taken some of the things that Patrick recommends. I should probably try, but I'm thinking about going to a low T center here in Omaha. Do they have low T centers in Omaha? Obviously they do. And I wanted to get Dr. Massey's opinion. Does he think that these are beneficial, dangerous, or any of the above? So I don't know. What do they give at these low T centers? Do you know, do they give you a kind of a shot of testosterone for Jeremiah?
Yeah, there are choices. You can get a cream, you can get an injection, or you can get the pellets.
Huh.
Those are the ones that I know about. And then a person can see if that's what they were really missing. So it's worth a quick trial if you're low. If you raise it up to normal and suddenly you feel
better,
like, oh, I'm satisfied with life, this is great,
uh-huh,
then you may want to stay with that. But remember, once you start the bioidentical hormones, unless some inner stories are shifted, you'll need those the rest of your life, is how it works. So just be ready to commit to that if that's the path that you go. Well, if you do some of the things Patrick recommends on the show, and you can get up your testosterone levels more naturally, then you're not dependent on an outside hormone.
Even though when I'm taking pine pollen, am I not teaching my body in the same way to not make it? But it's different because it's a food thing?
That's what I think. So like in nature, if you were an animal roaming around in nature, you would have access to pine pollen. and that would be, and that would be part of your testosterone program that you would intuitively go for.
I see.
So to me, that's really different because we're just wandering through nature finding things. But, you know, making a, and I take bioidentical hormones. I made that decision years ago, found out I had celiac disease, very low hormones. So I started taking bioidenticals, and I take a break every now and then, but pretty much got to stay on them if you want to keep the same level of physical experience.
What do you do, cream thing?
Uh-huh.
And you do it
for testosterone? Yeah, and the other bioidenticals you can get over the counter, a lot of them. I also have a prescription that I use very rarely for hydrocortisone tablets, which are natural, but somehow it became a prescription. I don't know why. And I take a little DHEA most days, and some days a little pregnenolone. And but once a person starts, you can tell a difference in the felt experience of life.
Huh. So
it's like being younger.
But when you take them though, these little bios. Oh, so is that what the docs give prescription? Are they really giving you a bioidentical testosterone?
I hope so. You know, I haven't been out there in the mix. I have the good fortune of seeing Lane Sebring.
Does he do it?
He's very natural oriented. Yeah, he's very naturally oriented. And so I get prescriptions for the natural stuff rather than some sort of partly synthetic thing.
Ah, I got you. So you get some natural bioidentical cream for testosterone that you can just rub on.
Yeah.
The cream would seem interesting because it feels like you could monitor it and more easily rather than get a shot or the pellets where it's kind of in there, and if it's too much or not enough, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, go chase the girls at the high school, I guess. I had somebody come in and had that happen to them, you know. They got the pellet, apparently, and then they released all at once, and it was supposed to be a four-month supply.
I see, okay.
And
you're down on 6th Street in Austin, you know, trolling for, you know, whatever. Don't want to do that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one for you. I was on a pretty heavy med for rheumatoid arthritis, which left me with some numbness in my toes. Oh, how could I talk to my nerves in the way you described earlier to thank them when they were damaged by doctors, hospital systems? Hope this makes sense. So how would you apply that to that way of talking to your body? So he's suggesting that this thing happened because of the drugs that the docs gave him. So how would he work through that from your perspective?
Yes, and so what you said earlier is the big piece, Patrick, where we finally can tell the story where there's no victims or perpetrators. And however this person wants to do that, everybody will have a different way to do it. There are so many ways to do it. I only know a few of them, the ways that work for me and for the people that I know. So I can't speak in some broad general way that applies to everyone. But whenever I hear that, I think, okay, did someone else in the family trying to get well? Did they take a medicine that was damaging to them? If it did, we would want to talk to that person in the family system. And of course, on a physical level, you want to do Dietrich Klinghardt's five levels here. You'd want to take some high doses of B vitamins and some fats that the nerves really love. I like that neuromethylation cream. I would rub that on my feet wherever it's numb. I would do that every day. And take shots of B vitamins if you can.
So
overload with B's.
What's the cream that you're doing on your toes? I'm sorry, what's the cream you're doing on your toes?
Yeah, it's called neuromethylation cream.
Neuromethylations?
Huh. Uh-huh. And it's got the activated forms of B6, B12, and folic acid in it. So they're already pre-activated. So you could, you know, rub them in the area where the nerves are, maybe get a little DMSO on top of that so it absorbs more deeply, and see if it makes a physical difference. And be kind to the you several years ago that went in and didn't know any better than to ask for medicine.
Just be kind.
Be kind to that person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't judge yourself for having gone in, and because that was the only option you knew, or the only option that seemed like it would work. And so we've got to have compassion for that earlier version of ourselves that, you know, did what they felt they had to do.
Yeah, very good. So is this a neuro methylation? Is that a over-the-counter thing?
No. You know, Meridian buys it, and we stock it here. There's some famous doctor in Texas here who designed it, and I forget his name. But it's really great for getting B vitamins into people, especially those three.
Neuromethylation.
Neuromethylation cream, it's called. And you just squirt it out on your arm and rub it in, or put it on your feet if that's where you hurt.
How you spell neuro?
N-E-U-R-O.
I knew that.
Neuromethylation. I know you knew it.
I kind of knew that. So before we go quickly then, because it's time for Ray Pete, on the methylation, on the pasteurization thing. So when we, a couple of months ago, we were talking to Ray Pete about it, and he said that there's documents, you know, that Louis Pasteur, he actually rigged the game. Or no, I think it was Dr. Cowan. Dr. Cowan talked about that, where he actually admitted that he cooked the books on his whole, you know, on his whole germ theory.
Yes.
So
yes, that the germ had to come in with the poison, and it was the poison that made people sick, not the germ.
Not the germ. Wow. So to this day, we're pasteurizing our milk, and we're trying to kill it because we think there's something bad in there.
Yes, and it kind of shows you how, once again, the solution is the problem. Milk was fine the way it was. Why do we apply this solution? We've got to fix this imaginary problem that isn't even real. So whenever Stephen Jenkinson calls them solution mongers.
Solution mongers?
People who are just, yes, they're just programmed. They can't help themselves, but they have, whenever they hear anything, they have to find a solution for it.
Oh.
And the solution is often worse than the original problem.
Generally. Here's the last one for you. This is from Aaron. Intermittently, I will have a fluttering sound in my left ear. It seems like an eardrum is fluttering. What could be causing this, Aaron in California? A fluttering left ear.
Wow. Okay. You know, I have to tell you, I've never heard that described, but I would certainly go in and have somebody look at your ear and see what your eardrum physically looks like. I've looked at a lot of eardrums in my life, and some of them have pieces of wax that are hanging from the side that could very well be fluttering and touching the eardrum on and off.
Interesting.
So one of the things a person could do is take some 3% peroxide, lay on their side, dump it in their ear, and just let it do the volcano thing for a while until all the wax plugs are out, and then see if that clears it up.
What's the maximum hydrogen peroxide dose you can nebulize? I was going to ask you that, and I forgot.
Ooh, you know, all I remember is the Respade formula. And I know people do it much more aggressively, but I think in the Respade formula, they used a 0.003%, which is very, very dilute. The IVs typically are 0.03. I would think that would be safe as well, since it goes in a vein. But peroxide can be pretty rough on the lungs, so be careful starting out.
So,
and the rest of the people mix it with colloidal silver. So they mix colloidal silver and peroxide together. And that product worked so well, it was discontinued.
So if you could get down to a 3%, you could probably figure the math on 0.03, right? And just don't get stronger than that.
Yeah, that would be my recommendation. And so far, I like your screenplay. I'm happy to report, you know. And I just started because I don't like reading anymore. But I thought we're going to be on the show today. He might ask me. I don't want to be embarrassed. So I thought I'll sit down and read a few pages, and it was actually good. I actually am caught up in the story now, and I got to find out what happens to people.
Cool. Well, you know, what's interesting, I'm completely rewriting the thing. But go ahead. I get your opinion on what you understand and what you don't. But then the next one I'll send you is going to be, so much better. What happened was is I hired this high-level Hollywood script doctor lady, and it was kind of expensive, but I'm really into this stuff, so I did it. And she just blew up my world, right? It was like she just, you know, blew the whole thing. I was doing the Zoom thing, right? So she just blows up my world. So the first 15 minutes was like I was in shock, you know. But then after that, I really got that this was the divine inspiration entering my being, and she knows what she's talking about, right? So she really helped me to learn so much more about it. It was great money well spent. So I'm rewriting the whole thing. I'm about halfway done. So I'll give you version two when you're done with that one. Yeah. So it's thanks for doing it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
All right, kid, we gotta go. It's always fun talking to you. We should do it more often. Thanks. Tell Meridian I said hi, and we will see you soon. Sooner than Suni. And Doodle and I will come visit sometime, so we can hang out.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Doc. See you real soon.
All right. Love you, Patrick.
I love you too, brother. Dr. Richard Massey, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Okay, we're going to...